Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, a show where we explore the people, stories, and events of Central Iowa. We are your hosts today, Ursula Rudenberg and
Greta Anderson. Those aren't Christmas bells. Those are bicycle bells. And this week's edition of Local Talk concerns the bicycle culture of Central Iowa. We feature information about bike trails in Central Iowa, the economic development that has sprung up around the High Trestle Trail in Boone County, and a unique business in Ames that manufactures bicycle trailers for enthusiasts around the country and the world.
We begin with a conversation with our landlord at the Pantorium at 410 Douglas, here in Ames. Not only has Dennis Jones been focusing on renovating this building and beautifying downtown, he is a passionate bicyclist who founded, among others, the group Friends of Central Iowa Bicycling. This group advocates for bike lanes and bike safety in Ames and beyond, and recycles donated bikes. In fact, the Friends of Central Iowa will run a bicycle recycling program in this building where KHOI is located, the Ames Pantorium. Dennis and other volunteers will collect and fix old bikes and make them available to bikers. Here's KHOI reporter Debbie Bunka talking with Dennis.
How many miles a year do you ride, Dennis?
I probably average 2,000 to 3,000 miles per year. So I'm not a heavy bicyclist, but I do get out there bike quite a bit.
That's pretty impressive. What does your organization do exactly?
We were formed about 15 years ago, back when there weren't many bicycle paths or trails in Ames, and we were trying to encourage both Parks and Rec and the City Council to build more bikeways and recognize bicyclists as mode of transportation and recreation in Ames area.
What sort of spurred you to become involved in just cycling in Iowa with your organization, with the trail? What spurred you on?
I started back in 83. I was working for Iowa State University, riding back and forth to work. I got to meet other bicyclists and got enthused about going on RideBri. And so I went on RideBri. And long about that time, we had a neighbor in Northern Ames that was a college student, and he was riding from his home in Northern Ames to the university. He was riding across the bridge across Squaw Creek. And while he was riding across there, the pedestrian that was also on the bridge looking down at the river turned around and bumped him out into the street. Not long after that, a neighbor was riding across the intersection at Stang and 13th Street and was hit by a car and ended up on the hood of the car and was crippled for life and injured for life. And so after that, I got involved in the City Bicycle Committee. The city had a committee at that time that was more of an advisory to the city staff and the council. And when I got involved in that, I met other folks, and we decided that we really wanted to step beyond. We wanted to step beyond just the city issues.
So it was your knowledge of a couple of tragic incidents, not resulting in death, but still fortunate nonetheless, that spurred you on to become involved in your organization.
Yeah.
Why are bikes important?
Well, for me, it's just a comfortable, nice way for exercise and fitness. There's a side to it that's tangible in terms of cost for transportation, these kinds of things, the more utilitarian aspects, and then there's just the pleasure part of it. I really just enjoy being out and riding.
So if you were to say anything to people who wanted to start cycling in Central Iowa, what would you recommend?
Talk to your bicycle shop and find something that's comfortable and convenient. The bicycles at the discount stores are going to tend to be a little heavier and a little more awkward to use. Even if you don't end up buying from a bicycle shop, let those folks help you a little bit in terms of enthusiasm for the kinds of things to look for that's comfortable on a bike. And then you need to find a friend. Find a friend that is willing to work with you. If you're going to haul a bike to a trail, well, you want to do it in a way that the bike doesn't fall off and, and that you get there comfortably and as well, and there are all kinds of ways to do that.
We often hear people who drive talk about the romance of the road. Is that true of cycling too?
Oh, I definitely think so. I mean, that's probably what draws me to it as well. And it's really nice to get out on a road, a low-traffic county road or a trail, and with one or two buddies and just talk as you do and clear yourself from the troubles of the week. We used to go out, used to have a bicycling friend that I went out essentially every morning with. And that's kind of gone by the wayside because he moved out of town. But I really miss that. There was something soothing about just having somebody to talk to and sort through your troubles and the highlights of the week.
Next, reporter Cynthia McClure talks with Jerry Neal, one of Dennis's colleagues in the Friends of Central Iowa Bicycling and an avid cyclist in her own right.
My name's Jerry, and I do live here in town. I actually have a job on the Iowa State University campus. And one thing that I'm seen doing a lot of in town is riding a bicycle or interacting with bicyclists or being involved with bicycle clubs in all sorts and kinds of ways. So it's something that I always kind of have fun talking about it because it's a lot of my life, and people's first, second, and third reaction a lot of times is, wow, that's so amazing. And I always want to say it really isn't, you know, it's fun and it isn't that hard to do once you just kind of get a pattern to doing it. It's a lifestyle choice that I make deliberately to live here. I commute, so I make sure that I ride to work in all weather, all winter. Yes, I do ride all year round.
In the snow and the ice storms. And
right. If the roads aren't cleared, just like the people who drive cars, then it's too dangerous and I won't be on it. But if the roads are cleared, then I'll be out there. I think that bicycling has one wonderful advantage outside of just getting exercise is that it does put you in touch, more in touch with the natural world. So you're actually a lot more in touch with your environment when you're on your bike. I ride a lot because I like the challenge of doing it. I have a trailer, a couple different kinds of bike trailers, and I like the idea of seeing what I can do in my everyday life that I can do by my bicycle.
So I shop.
I do all that sort of thing in addition to just going out for road rides. Yeah, it's fun.
So what kind of bike clubs are there here in the local area in central Iowa?
There are a lot of bike clubs in the state. And one of the reasons that there are a lot of them is because Iowa has the RAG Ride, the Register's annual Great Bike Ride across Iowa. And people like to kind of take that on as a personal goal. And then they like to have fun doing it. So there are hordes of bike clubs simply that organize because their primary purpose will be to ride that ride and to have friends and to go on it. And then there are a lot of folks that don't stop with just the summer training for RAG Ride, but they like to try to ride year-round and to do a lot of fun things together. And there are so many bike clubs.
So can you give us some resources so we can let the people know about those if they wanted to look them up?
Right. The best way to find out a bicycle event, and there are bicycle events happening pretty much all year round, is to go to visit a place called Bike Iowa. And they have a website. It's bikeiowa.com. And that is the place to go. They keep a running list of events and clubs and activities and all sorts of things so that you can find out what's going on and be there. A lot of people ride just for exercise or recreation or to get around town. You don't necessarily have to be in a club, but you may want to go to a special event because then there's food and drinks and there's all kinds of social things
going on. So this is a way to keep tabs at bikeiowa.com.
Bikeiowa.com. It's a great way to keep tabs.
Bicycle, bicycle, bicycle. I want to ride my I want to ride my bicycle.
Iowa is known for its biking opportunities and system of biking trails. One of the leaders in developing these trails is the Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation. We asked Lisa Hine, Program Planning Director at the organization, and she was kind enough to come by to discuss what they do, including their most spectacular recent accomplishment, the High Trestle Trail. Ursula spoke with her here at the studio.
This is Ursula Rudenberg for Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and I'm here with Lisa Hine from the Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation. Hi, Lisa. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you very much.
Can you tell us a little bit about what the Natural Heritage Foundation does?
Sure. Thanks. The Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation has been around since 1979, and we are a nonprofit land conservation organization. So we actually work throughout the entire state of Iowa in helping to protect lands that become wildlife areas, habitat, county parks, state parks. We help communities work on projects that help protect natural areas and groundwater and things like that. And because of our experience in land protection and land acquisition, early on we got involved in helping acquire discontinued railroad corridors. Some of the very first trail projects that we were involved in include Cedar Valley Nature Trail that runs from Cedar Falls and Waterloo to Cedar Rapids, the Heritage Trail, which runs outside of Dubuque, the Raccoon River Valley Trail, the Wabash Trace Nature Trail, 63 miles in southwest Iowa. And the trails are a great way for people to get outside and enjoy nature, and then hopefully that will lead to a greater awareness of the overall need to protect our environment and protect the Iowa landscape.
One of the most spectacular is the High Trestle Bridge. For anybody who has seen it, especially at night, it's an unforgettable sight. Can you describe a little bit what is on the High Trestle Bridge?
The High Trestle Bridge is part of the High Trestle Trail, and the High Trestle Trail runs from Ankeny through Slater, Madrid, over to Woodward. So it's 25 miles. The bridge itself spans the Des Moines River Valley between Madrid and Woodward. So it sits 13 stories in the air, and it's a half mile long. It was part of the Union Pacific Railroad Corridor that was discontinued in about 2003. When the railroad discontinued use, they took down the decking to use at their new bridge that was going in over the Des Moines River near Boone, part of their main line that runs through Ames. And so we were left with, I think it's 44 pillars across the river valley. So there were pillars that were left, but no connections. So part of the project was actually having to rebuild the bridge surface and the bridge deck.
So how did it become a bike trail and a hiking trail?
Yeah. When Union Pacific Railroad planned for the discontinuance of that line, we stepped in to negotiate the purchase of that line for public use, and they provided a significant bargain sale to us, so they contributed a lot of land value. Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation formed a steering committee made up of representatives from Ankeny, Sheldahl, Slater, Madrid, and Woodward, and Story County, Boone County, Dallas County, and Polk County. So the steering committee worked together, and we helped guide them to find grant dollars to help build the trail. The first two sections built in about 2006 were a mile in Ankeny and a half mile or less in Woodward. And in 2006, Congress authorized a special appropriation for this project of a little over $5 million. That was the spark that really gave us the leverage to build a large section of it. And I think what really put the icing on the cake was the art. I got the idea of putting art on trail bridges from the folks down in Fairfield, Iowa. They're involving artists on their trail bridges, and they got the idea from Tucson, Arizona. So I suggested to the committee, what do you think of this idea? Let's see about putting some art on the bridge. And they're like, sure, that sounds great. David Dahlquist, the public artist that you see a lot of his work across Iowa, he was selected by the committee, and he did the concepts for what we call cribs, the square shapes that are lit up. There's a lot of coal mining history in this part of the river valley. So that square shape is based on what you would see entering a coal mine. And then he rotated it so that it would give some interest. There's pillars on each end, about 40-foot tall pillars on each end.
With coal on them.
Yeah, seams of coal that have been actually clay tile that Dahlquist created. And the cribs go across the entire bridge, but over the river valley, they're about 15 feet apart, and that's the part that's lit up. So, and that's, it rotates all across the bridge, but that part is very dense, and that's where the main...
And so when you stand there at night, the mm-hmm. cribs are lit up with thin blue line, mm-hmm. neon lines, and when you stand in, at one end, the rotating images look like you're looking down a mine shaft. It creates an optical illusion.
Mm-hmm.
I never would have thought it would work with such a simple, such a simple construct of just some squares.
Mm-hmm.
But it really does.
Mm-hmm. It's a pretty amazing story.
Well, and it also has to be said, the view is very spectacular.
It is, and there's some neat geology from the Des Moines River Valley. The melting of the glaciers 10,000 years ago really helped carve the Des Moines River Valley. And there's also the coal mining history in there as well, and there's some interesting railroad history. Before they built the bridges, they had to go down into the river valley and kind of curve and come up, and a lot of times they would derail, and they'd get down to the bottom and have to sort of haul one car at a time up the valley on the other side. So it was very cumbersome and slow going. And mm-hmm. about 1912, the Milwaukee line, which owned the railroad at the time, came in and built all new bridges across that area. So mm-hmm. there are some interpretive panels that are out on the bridge itself that tell a little bit about the natural history, and as well as the cultural history, the railroad history of that corridor in the river valley. So folks will find that interesting as well.
And there's historical photographs of the bridge
Absolutely.
Itself.
And there's a neat overlook, actually. That's the other interesting part about the bridge is on the west end of the bridge, there's an scenic overlook that was part of the first railroad bridge. And so there's an area for people to gather, and there's picnic tables and things like that up there.
And I think by the overlook, there's a station where you can phone in for mm-hmm. historical information.
Mm-hmm. You know, the Des Moines River Valley itself is spectacular, and this bridge would be a showstopper just because of Mother Nature and being 13 stories high over the Des Moines River. And the art just takes it over the top and it makes it a world-class icon now.
It's a magical site, and one of the things that makes it magical is that you can't really drive up to it.
The easiest way to get there is to get on Highway 210, which runs between Madrid and Woodward and also goes through Slater. And just west of Madrid, there's a road called QF Lane, and there's a sign that says High Trestle Trail Parking. And so you turn south off of 210, and there's a parking area, and there's it's about a half-mile walk in to the bridge. Or you can take your bicycle, and it's wheelchair accessible. And there's even somebody in Madrid that has a supply of wheelchairs. So, like, for example, my mom, she's not in a wheelchair, but she's old enough that half a mile is a pretty hard walk for her. I can borrow a wheelchair and take her out there. That's the easiest way. Or you can bicycle. Heck, you can bicycle from Ames. You can get on a bicycle and take the bike lanes down the County Line Road, R38. That takes you to Slater. Get on the trail in Slater and bike all the way over to the bridge. Round trip, it's about 50 miles. It's a nice little Saturday afternoon bike ride for a lot of folks.
How many people use the trail?
The bridge itself receives about 500 people a day,
wow.
And there's probably about 300 on the rest of the trail, 200 to 300 people a day.
So what kind of things do people say about the bridge and that trail?
It's magical. I think that's probably the one thing I hear. You mentioned it earlier, that it's just magical. Mm-hmm. It's really hard to describe. One time I was out there, and there was a gentleman from Coon Rapids, and he was in his upper 80s, and it was a very windy day. And the wind comes down that river valley a lot anyway. But he was walking, holding onto the railing, hand over fist, you know, walking into these 30-mile-an-hour gusts. And my husband and I came along, and we were like, do you need some help? And he's like, no, this is the best time of my life. I'm having so much fun. I'm picking my ride up on the other side of the bridge, and I'm determined to get across there. And he was just having a blast.
So did the biking culture in Iowa take a step forward with this bridge?
I think biking and walking and just being outdoors, that whole aspect took a big leap forward because we build so many places for our cars, we don't always build places for people. And in this case, being way up high at the top of the river valley where you can be out there without any vehicles, it's just a wonderful way to experience nature and watch the birds fly above you and below you. And it's just Iowa Outdoors, I think, took a big leap forward with this project. And I think the other exciting thing about this project is economic development that's occurred in some of the communities. There's folks from all over Iowa and the Midwest and the country that come to see this trail and experience trails in Iowa as a whole, because we like to promote Iowa as the world capital of trails. We've got thousands of miles of trails in the state, and it's just amazing. You know, it's been said years ago, Iowa doesn't have mountains like Colorado and doesn't have oceans like the coasts, but we have an amazing trail system, and we've really worked hard over the last 20, 30 years to develop the trail system. High Trestle Trail is just, you know, it wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for the other trails that have come before it. And but this one has seen new restaurants in Woodward, and I think about three new restaurants in Madrid, a new restaurant in Slater. Ankeny is trying to develop a whole new trail access point with a farmer's market area built around the main trail access point. So there's a lot going on, and I really look forward to the businesses in the communities realizing how much this trail brings in, and looking forward to them being creative and getting trail users off the trail and into their towns. And it is exciting.
Where is a good place to get information about the bridge online?
Sure. You folks can go to our website, which is inhf.org. inhf.org, which is Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation.org. Folks can call our office. That number is 515-288-1846.
They can repeat it.
515-288-1846.
Where can one get a bicycle map of the state for trails?
The Iowa Department of Transportation publishes a bicycling map for Iowans, and it outlines the traffic counts on the road. So if you want to use county road and bike on a low-traveled road, so it gives traffic counts, and it also identifies where the trails are. And certainly folks can go to our website and look for trail information there.
Well, thank you so much for coming. I've been speaking with Lisa Hine, who's with the Natural Heritage Foundation, which is based out of Des Moines, speaking about biking trails in Iowa and the bike culture that's growing up around it, on a new level with the High Trestle Trail. Okay. Thank you so much for coming in.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
HOI's Local Talk, where we talk about the people, stories, and events of Central Iowa. I'm your host today, Ursula Rudenberg, here today with Greta Anderson, and our county correspondent, Susan Franson, went out and forged a trail to eating and drinking establishments in Madrid, Woodward, and Slater, towns where there are the High Trestle Trail and economic development is occurring, just to see what's been developing as a result of the trail. We'll start with her visit to Madrid's Flat Tire Lounge.
I'm Beau Cousins. I live here in Madrid. I've grown up here. I've worked here since the bar has opened. We've had a great time in the last year and a half, I would say it is. We've had Ragbri come through, which is awesome for the town. Everybody, I think we counted 3,500 came through the bar, so the bike trail was a big hit on Ragbri, even though it wasn't on the original route. So we had music and different stands all set up throughout our property.
You weren't on the original route? Oh, well, why did you attract people then? How did they know about you?
They do this thing on RagBrite. It's called the Century Loop, which if you want to ride 100 miles that day, they take you off the route. And they wanted to bring people across the bridge, and the bridge couldn't handle all of RagBrite, so only like the committed riders got to come through the bridge, and then they stopped here, stopped in Slater, and then on to, I think it was Altoona.
For those who aren't sitting here looking at it, just how far are you from the bike trail?
About 10 feet, actually. Looks right over the bike trail. It's hard not to stop if you're a biker and you hear music and see all the people in the summer having a great time. So.
You also serve food?
In the summer, we do. That is correct. But we have the radish from Grimes. Have them here Friday through Monday.
What percentage of your business is bicyclists?
Oh, quite a bit in the summer. And then, thankfully for the locals, we have them here during the winter when we need them. And probably, I'd have to say 80% of our customers in the summer are bicyclists. So, also this year, they're going to plow the bike trail so the real committed bicyclists can ride in the winter, too. So we'll see how that goes. We are a Kwanzaa Hut, so it's a very unique bar. I mean, you don't see many Kwanzaa Hut bars. We do a lot of live bands. We have a lot of live bands in the winter and in the summer, I guess. We have Jason from the Nadas, comes about every other Sunday and plays for us. Great in the biking community. We do poker runs for the bicyclists. They love that. That's a lot of fun.
What's a poker run?
Poker run, each stop you get a card, and then you go to the next bar and you get a card, and then you meet back somewhere, and whoever has the best poker hand wins. That's for bicyclists. We do a lot of that. You can check us out on flattirelounge.com. Also, you can find us on Facebook. We always have all of our new stuff up on Facebook.
I'm Dean Vanderwilt, owner of Cayenne's Cafe Woodward. I've been open 9 years. I opened a couple years before there was an idea of a bike trail, and the bike trail's been open 2 years now. I ran the restaurant by myself for the first 4.5 years before I hired my first employee. And during the summer of last year, because of the bike trail, I increased from 1 to 9.
What are other businesses that are impacted by the bike trail?
The bike trail goes from Ankeny to Woodward, and I'm not real familiar with a lot of the businesses in Ankeny, but I know Slater has a couple bars that do serve food. Madrid has a couple bars, a couple restaurants. I'm majority restaurant, and I serve some drinks. And then this last summer, there was a sports bar that was built in town, and they're pretty much right on the bike trail. So I think there's a wide variety of places for the bikers to go.
What do you serve here at Cayenne's?
At Cayenne's, at lunch I have a soup and salad bar. I also have a wide variety of sandwiches. In the evening I do spaghetti every night, and I started doing pizza a couple years ago, so pizza's been really popular. Everything we do here is pretty much homemade.
Well, I noticed that you have chili peppers hanging from your ceiling.
Yeah.
Does that reflect in your menu?
Not so much now as it did when I first opened. I tend to cook on the spicy side, but the locals really aren't that familiar with spicy food. And then I have visited the Tucson, Arizona area for the last 20 years. And over that time, I picked up some knickknacks and stuff that are decorated on my wall. So it's kind of a Southwest-themed restaurant, but not necessarily the food represents that.
Why did you come to Woodward to open a business?
Long story short is I've been in the restaurant business for 20, 25 years, and I've always wanted to own my own place. And before I bought the restaurant, I worked in Adel, knowing I wanted to own my own restaurant. And every time I would go fishing in Northeast Iowa, Decorah area, I would take different routes, look at different towns. And one day I was headed up there, drove through Woodward, and just made a mental note that Woodward looked like a nice town. Never been here before. And when I got home from my fishing trip, there was a postcard in my mailbox that a building was for sale in Woodward on the same weekend that I drove through. So I had to come up and look, and a week later I bought the place.
Sounds like it was meant to be.
That's right.
I'm Brian Maunu. I'm the chef and general manager at Saddles Barbecue Bistro. We're a family-oriented barbecue restaurant serving sandwiches and dinners. We're at 203 South State Street in Madrid, Iowa. We're only 7 months old, and we're still working on getting everything where we want it to be.
How did you decide to start your business?
The owner of the building here, he had this space that he didn't have a renter for and hadn't had a renter in here, so we knew the bike trail was open, the trestle bridge was finally open, it had been open, you know, for a year, and we knew there was a bunch of traffic on the trestle trail, high trestle trail, and so we thought it'd be a good opportunity to open something basically for the community and, you know, try and get customers off the trail too, you know, have a better traffic count than just relying on the community at large. The trail did have an impetus to get us going in this business and start it up.
What are your customers' favorites when they come in to eat here?
A lot of it's the pulled pork. We sell a lot of pulled pork sandwiches. We do have a Saddles cheesesteak. That's my sort of take on a Philly cheesesteak, but it's not really a Philly cheesesteak. Ribs have been going pretty well since we started those. The brisket's pretty popular, too. And the chicken. We sell a lot of chicken. We've had families come in and tell us that they're glad that we're here just because the other places along the trail, they're bar-type places, and, you know, this place isn't a bar. We do have beer and wine, but we don't purport ourselves as a bar. People are happy about that. We've had a lot of people from out of state and out of the country that, when they come in, they stop by and they tell us where they're from. And we're on Facebook, and every time somebody comes in, I get a notification. Oh, they like us on Facebook, so that helps me, you know, keep going and makes me feel good about, you know, okay, I'm doing the right thing, and, you know, it's just taking time to get people to notice us. You know, I think all the businesses along the trail, their frustration is the lack of advertising we're able to do on the trail, per se. You know, we can have a little 2-foot by 6-inch sign out on the trail, but, you know, there's spaces at the trailheads where people stop, they're planning their day, where, you know, it'd be nice to be able to, you know, post what's along the trail on both ways so they don't have to sit and try and look for it once they're on the trail. And, oh, well, now what we went past the sign, and, you know, you don't really want to stop when you're on a bike to go around and turn around and look back. So the Boone County Park Board is in charge of this. So, you know, we need to work with them more to get some sort of coherent advertising or something that tells people what's along the trail.
How did you come up with the name Saddles?
We needed something to tie it into the trail. And, you know, there's a horse trail out there, so there's saddles on a horse. They call the bike seat a saddle.
Yeah.
You know, and we're looking, you know, hopefully getting some the motorcycle traffic that comes through town. They call their seats saddles, too, so.
My name is David Sturdy. I own Cole's Ice Cream Shop in Slater, Iowa. It's on Highway 210 and R38.
And is there a bike trail nearby?
Yes, there is a bike trail up there about 5-6 blocks. There's a lot of traffic on the bike trail, and they stop in here during the seasons.
And when is the season?
Oh, it ends about September, October, and it starts up, you know, it all depends on the weather. You know, mm-hmm. They'll start riding out in April, March if it's a good day.
So would you say there's a significant portion of your business that comes from the bike trail?
It's getting more and more. When I get more publicity, you know, they stop up here. And we had more last year than the year before. So it's picking up. They come here from Indianola, Ottumwa, Ames, Fort Dodge, Boone.
Well, you say you're an ice cream shop, but you do have meals.
Yes. The tenderloins are our number one seller there. We were nominated for the best in the state. Everything's pretty much local. The ice cream, the tenderloin's local, the ice cream's local. It's from Picket Fence in Woodward. All natural, organic dairy, 12 miles away. And they make their ice cream there. And so we advertise that and stuff, you know, local product and stuff. And we sell some Blue Bunny that's local. So it's all Iowa stuff that we sell, the pork's Iowa products.
What's your best story about a bicycle customer? Do you have any?
these group of guys, five, came in, and my door was, I had my sign off. It was 10:30, and I closed at 10. And they just knocked on the door, and they pleaded to make tenderloins. So I had to make 5 to 6 tenderloins for them. You know, and they were all appreciative, and they were a great bunch of guys, and, you know, regular customers. And I enjoyed working with them. I stayed late and left the light on for them. When the moon's full, they ride late. You know, so if you have a full moon on a weekend, you'll be busy late, you know, because they really enjoy their rides, yes. The bikers are very friendly, you know, cordial, and I always ask how many miles they ride, and they're riding 25 miles, 30 miles, 40 miles, and it's just good to see ambitious people out, not being cooped up in the house and getting off the couch, and interesting people, because, you know, the people that sit at home, they don't have much to say anyway.
Well, thank you.
I've got a bike, you can ride it if you like. It's got a basket, a bell and rings and things to make it look good. I'd give it to you if I could, but I borrowed it. You're the kind of girl that fits in with my world. I'll give you anything, everything, if you want things.
Our earlier guests discussed some of the challenges of riding in Ames. One of those challenges is finding a place to park your bike. The Ames Community Art Council wants to do something about that. Barbara stopped by to explain.
This is Ursula Rudenberg for Local Talk, and I'm here with Barbara Walton. Welcome, Barbara.
Thank you.
And Barbara is the co-president of the Ames Community Arts Council. Who is the other president?
The other president is Jim Wilcox.
And Barbara, you are a bike rider.
I am. I have 2 bicycles.
Do you find Ames a good place to ride a bicycle?
Ames has become increasingly a better town to bicycle in because of more bicycle paths, as well as better signage on the streets. And I have also noticed that there's more and more people that are bicycling. And I think maybe a few years ago, when the gas prices were really starting to go up, it seemed like people were more on their bicycles. And I know for me, I really upped the amount of time that I spent on my bicycle.
Would you say the reason you bike is mostly economic?
It's economics and environmental and health.
You were the person who had the vision for doing a contest in downtown Ames for building bicycle racks as art projects. How did you get that idea?
I happen to have an artist studio in downtown Ames, and that's one of the places that I bike to regularly, and I noticed that there were only a few bicycle racks. I also noticed that of the 2 bicycle racks, the loops, I guess they're called, they looked like they had been there a while, and it looked like maybe a collision with a car had done some damage. You can clearly see the need for bicycle racks because there might be bicycles tied or locked to any vertical element like lampposts, parking meters, street signs, even some of the benches.
So why make an art project out of it?
And the other thing that inspired me was that there are other artists that are slowly moving into downtown Ames, and one happened to be a colleague of mine who was a sculptor. I think it was a combination of, you know, discussions with him and the need for bicycle racks that inspired me to think, hey, I should, you know, since I'm the president of Ames Community Arts Council, why don't I start something that's both functional and artistic? We've asked that artists, designers send ideas for 2 large bike racks, 2 medium bike racks, and 2 small bike racks. And we've identified 6 places in downtown Ames where these bike racks will be placed. So we're looking forward to many submissions. And the submissions will probably come from areas outside of Ames, too.
And there is a monetary prize associated with the designs.
Correct.
So if somebody listening to this show wants to make a submission, where would they find the information on how to do this?
The information is located on the Ames Community Arts Council website under a call for artist designers.
So what is the website of the Ames Community Arts Council?
The website is amesart.org, where they can find the prospectus where designs will be placed, in addition to samples from other cities.
So it's amesart.org, and the deadline is December 31st?
That's correct.
And you are still accepting submissions and hope that people will apply?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We're very excited for as many designs as people will send us.
So, Barbara, you have a studio downtown, is that right?
I do.
You're a painter?
I am a painter.
How do you envision this project affecting downtown?
Well, we've had a lot of enthusiasm from the very beginning, but I think once they're actually there and people begin using them, they will be even more enthusiastic and know that the city of Ames is very supportive of the arts and bicycle enthusiasts and the health of their citizens and the progressiveness of their town.
And as a bicycle rider yourself, how do you think it'll make you feel to use one of those bike racks?
Personally, I will feel that locking my bike up to a artistic and functional bicycle rack will be exciting.
Have you seen any of the designs?
I have not, but I have ideas of what I envision they would look like. And, you know, we've had a lot of important things happen in our town, and I envision some of those ideas and events being translated into bike racks.
Can you give me an example of one event that would translate into a bike rack?
Quasi-crystals.
Oh, nice.
Poet laureate. I don't know. Text. Words from some of our authors, poets.
Anything goes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you. Thank you, Barbara. Again, that's amesart.org, where you can find the submission information, and the deadline is December 31st. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, a show where we explore the people, stories, and events of Central Iowa. This last hour, we've been talking about the growing bicycle culture in Ames and the surrounding areas. Some of us use bicycles for getting to work, but in this next segment, reporter Greta Anderson interviews an Ames businessman who outfits bicycles for doing work, moving objects and carrying loads.
Hi, this is Greta Anderson, a volunteer reporter for Local Talk. I'm here with Jim Gregory of Bikes at Work. Hi, Jim.
Hello.
I understand that you manufacture...
We make large capacity cargo bicycle trailers, so people can carry cargo with their bicycles by pulling the trailer behind them.
And so you're seeking to expand the role of the bicycle beyond simply transporting people.
That's right. We build trailers for people who need to carry cargo of various kinds. We've built them for people who move furniture, for urban farms, people who are like have a bicycle sharing program, handymen, people who want to move lumber. A variety of things like that. Most of our customers are actually outside Ames, you know, all over the United States. We've sold several to Europe, Australia, places like that.
How do you ship them there? Do you put it in a box? Or
yeah, we make the trailers so they can be broken down into a size that's a little over 3 feet long, about a foot and a half high, and about half foot wide. So
you're limited in terms of the width.
That's right. We do make trailers in various widths. You know, we have a standard and a wide width, and we can make a custom width too if people ask for it, but we generally try to stick with those two standard widths.
Are they ever as wide as a car?
No, we don't recommend people doing that because it just gets to be too difficult trying to maneuver a trailer that wide. So generally they're with a cargo area within about 18 inches to maybe 2.5 feet wide.
Now, how do you engineer it so that the trailer doesn't bump the wheel? Now, I'm picturing a car or a truck has a hitch, mm-hmm. and that is the very last piece of metal
right.
on the, you know, the horizontal profile, mm-hmm. you might. Whereas a bike, the very last thing sticking out there right. is going to be the rubber tire.
Most bicycle trailers that, like we manufacture, have a trailer tow bar that curves around to the left-hand side. So you can turn to the right, maybe 45, 50 degrees, then you can turn all the way to the left, 90 degrees. And if you can turn to the right 45 to 50 degrees, that's generally adequate for a bike trailer. You're not going to generally turn much sharper than that.
Why do you put it on the left-hand side instead of the right-hand side?
The derailleur on most bikes is on the right-hand side. That's the part that shifts the gears, and so you need to be clear of that usually.
That makes sense.
So.
I was thinking that normally your right-hand turns are sharper than
right,
your left-hand
right.
turns. Yep. But yeah, the derailleur would get in the way. How did you get into this business?
Back when, I was just, graduating from college. And
that was just a couple years ago.
Well,
right?
Yeah, that was back in, that was 91, I think it was, something like that. I saw my first bicycle courier. I thought that would be kind of a neat job. But here in Ames, there really wasn't an option to operate as a courier because there just isn't that much demand for that kind of service. So I decided to do something that I thought people could use, which would be a grocery delivery service. And I bought a small trailer for carrying children to carry groceries in, and it really wasn't made for the task. And so over time, I experimented with different trailer designs and eventually came up with the design we're using now for making trailers.
Did you study engineering?
Yeah, I came here to Iowa State to get a master's in mechanical engineering at the time.
That worked out perfectly.
So, yeah, it worked out well.
I understand that you began what is now known as Cycles Recycling.
Right. There was somebody here in town who had, when I was operating the grocery delivery service, asked me if I'd be willing to pick up her recyclable material and take it down to the recycling center that's down there on East Lincoln Way. And I began to wonder, well, I wonder if other people might like that service too. And so I started thinking about how we could design a trailer that could carry several recycling bins at once, and I built that and then started offering the recycling service. And it gradually picked up over time to be the service that exists now. At one time, we were operating the recycling service that Cycles operates, and we were also operating a recycling service at Iowa State University. We used to collect from all the residence halls on campus and doing both at the same time, which got to be only too much work for us. And so we decided to sell off the curbside recycling service to someone else, which eventually became Cycles, and we just kept the Iowa State recycling for ourselves. And eventually Iowa State decided to discontinue the dorm recycling we were doing, but we still do newspaper recycling on campus for Iowa State.
You still do it?
Yeah, we still do.
By
bicycle, right.
For those of you who don't come to Ames much, this recycling business that we're talking about, you'll see bicycles going down the road in Ames that have 6 feet, 8 feet?
They are 8 feet long.
Mm-hmm. 8 feet long with bluish gray tubs stacked sometimes too high, and they can carry about how much?
The trailers are weighted for 300 pounds. They can serve at least 12 customers at a time that way. There are other services in the country using our trailers doing this as well. There's one in Northampton, Massachusetts, where they have, I think I heard, they have 10 of our trailers. They have 13 people working for them, and they have, I want to say, like 500 customers or something like that. It's very, really large. Really, they're doing quite well up in Northampton. It's a very progressive city from what I understand. So.
Well, so is Ames.
Yeah, Ames is too.
We came up with the idea, or rather you came up with the idea.
Maybe, I don't know. But it's heartening to see people doing that. That's great.
It is, and it's something Ames should be proud of.
Sure. It's nice that Ames is as bicycle-friendly as it is for getting around. When I first came to Ames, I was impressed as to how easy it was to get around by bike here. It's only gotten easier over time as the city has grown. They've been much more proactive in putting bicycle facilities on streets that really needed them, and it makes it much easier to get around now than it used to.
You must be in touch with some interesting people doing interesting things. What's the most interesting job you've had to build a trailer for?
All kinds of interesting things. Bike sharing program up in Edmonton, Alberta.
I'm sorry, what did you say?
A bike sharing program.
A bike sharing program.
Yeah, where they rebuild old bikes and then put them out in the community for people to ride. And then they use our trailers to shuttle bikes around.
Oh, so they use bikes to move bikes.
That's right, exactly, yep. We just got some pictures the other day from an urban farmer up in Hadley, Massachusetts, who sent us some pictures of carrying 1,100 pounds of beets and carrots to the local Whole Foods market, which I thought was pretty cool. He was pulling two trailers at once. Stronger legs than mine, I think, nowadays. I think probably the most impressive one of all, I think, is there's a guy in Montreal who has six of our trailers who runs a car-free furniture moving business. He just uses entirely bikes and trailers. And some of the loads this guy hauls is just incredible. Put on sofas and bookcases and whatnot, all on one trailer. And then he'll have a fleet of four or six of these going down the road, you know, all the furniture wrapped, tied down. He's moved over 1,100 households this way doing this in Montreal. So,
my goodness.
So really impressive.
The trailers are made out of aluminum?
That's correct. That's right.
How do you weld aluminum?
There's a process called TIG welding, tungsten inert gas welding, where you you have a torch with a tungsten tip that you strike an arc with that, and then you have a inert gas, typically it's argon, that flows around that to keep your weld pure, and then you can use that to melt the aluminum and feed aluminum wire at the same time. We do weld the tow bar using TIG process, and then we also weld our hitches, which are stainless steel. But most of the trailer, it's made out of pieces that can bolt together. We like it that way because it's easier to ship. You can make a much more compact trailer. If something should break, people can easily then replace parts too at the same time. The aluminum we use, we have custom extruded for us down in Albia, Iowa. And another extruder in Iowa also we have extruded for us.
That's nice. You're buying from a
exactly,
Iowa
yeah,
business?
That's right. We'd like to do that as much as we can.
You don't get your aluminum delivered to you by bike, do you?
No. We have a big, 48-foot truck comes in, and, we have to unload it that way. But
So how many years have you been doing this?
I guess about 20 years now, something like that. So it's been quite a while.
It's getting cold out there,
mm-hmm.
and I bet you ride your bike a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to tell me how you dress up?
Keep warm. Well, of course, when I have good long underwear as a a good base layer, I like to have stuff that's kind of wicking, some kind of polypropylene long underwear that keeps the sweat off your skin. It keeps you warmer that way. And then basically as many layers as you find that keep you warm on your legs and your torso. The critical thing is that we've always found is trying to keep your feet warm and your hands warm. And the important thing we find is that for both your hands and your feet is they have to have loose-fitting clothing. You don't have tight socks. You don't want to have tight gloves because any kind of constriction of your blood flow really makes you feel much colder quickly. So you want to usually wear a pair of wool mittens with some kind of shell over that. And then for your feet, loose wool socks and loose shoes. Generally, that will keep you warm maybe down to 10, 15 below. Depends upon how well windy it is. And then neoprene face mask is really critical, too, in that kind of weather, too. And once you got all that on and start moving on a bike, you generate so much heat and you're so well insulated that you stay pretty warm, really. Sometimes it's more a question of trying to stay cool than it is trying to stay warm.
Bronwyn was telling me that the trailer that you use mm-hmm. has goes in front of your bike.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct?
I've got another bike where we built just as a experiment where you have your front wheel, then you've got a cargo bed, and then you sit, and then you've got the back wheel. It's about, I think about maybe 7 feet long, the bike as a whole. It's a two-wheel bike with the cargo bed between your front wheel and where you're at. And the cargo bed's maybe 2 feet long, something like that. Those kind of bikes, they're popular in the Netherlands, and I think maybe in Denmark. They're called a bakfiets, B-A-K-F-I-E-T-S, I think. And they're oftentimes used for carrying cargo, also for carrying children. They use those instead of a baby trailer. And they can carry up to about maybe 100 kilograms, 220 pounds. Not too bad. I've built one just to see what it's like. And they're fun to use. But our experience has been just for capacity and for convenience, it's hard to beat a large bike trailer.
All right. So how would somebody find you if they wanted to have a trailer?
We're on the Internet. That's how we sell most of our bike trailers. It's at bikesatwork.com, BIKESATWORK.com.
Okay, BIKESATWORK.com.
That's correct.
Well, thanks for coming by, Jim.
Thank you, Rhett. Appreciate it.
This has been Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio.
We spoke with Dennis Jones, Jerry Neal, Lisa Hine, Bo Cousins, Dean Vanderwild, Brian Manu, David Sturdy, Barbara Walton, and James Gregory. The music we heard was Bicycle Race by Queen and Bike by Pink Floyd. Our theme music is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley.
Our reporters included Debbie Bunka, Cynthia McClure, Ursula Rudenberg, Susan Franson, and Greta Anderson. Executive producers were Greta Anderson and Ursula Rudenberg, and this program was engineered by Rick Morrison. Websites you heard today included bikeiowa.com for information about events and clubs in Iowa for biking, inhf.org for the Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation, amesart.org for the Ames Community Arts Council, bikesatwork.com for James Gregory's bike and trailer business, and flattirelounge.com for the Flat Tire Lounge on the High Trestle Trail. Thank you for listening, and see you again on the radio.